What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 79 of Valleytown. I'm Jamman V, and we got Raynad and Noxious back from traveling and hopefully recovering from all the jet lag and everything. How are you guys doing? Ray, it's been a couple weeks. How you doing?
I've been good, man. It's been a long month for sure. Trip ended up being pretty long, and then had a lot of work to catch up on when I came back because I kind of kept extending the travel. So I'm back now, though. It's been an exhausting couple weeks, but still fun. And it's been good. Been doing a lot of Pokemon Go the last couple days too, which has been awesome.
Oh so, man, that's been crazy lately. Yeah, I've been. So what's your highest ranked Pokemon right now?
It's only like 1,200, but I don't use Dust, so.
Yeah, exactly. 1,200's good, man. Mine are all just still in the hundreds and stuff, so. Yeah. How about you, Noxious? I know you've been in China for a week, so have you kind of checked
out Pokemon? Yeah, I didn't even really play it. I played it, like, I arrived, yesterday morning from China. I slept a little bit last night and went out this morning with a kid. Take him for a walk. It gives me an excuse to actually do Pokemon Go stuff.
Pick about 10 of them or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Having a kid is not as bad when you have Pokemon Go to walk him with.
So. Yeah. I did that whole bike ride kind of thing too. Wouldn't it be awesome if we could go and find cards in Hearthstone this way? That'd be so amazing.
Yeah. We were talking about that a bit earlier. I think I really like the idea of the whole augmented reality thing. So that'd be pretty cool if they added some kind of like real life quests. Where you go pick up cards from like at different locations. Although I imagine, can you even imagine like a bunch of people in New York just going to the same Starbucks to pick up a Hearthstone card? It would be a fucking nightmare.
Well, that's what they're seeing right now, man. You're seeing guys going to police stations and sure. And all kinds of people getting kicked out of malls. And
so, like, and on a serious note, though, Raynad, since I imagine you might have thought about the business side of that, like, do you think there's any future for the whole buying licenses to have exclusive Pokemon in certain areas and whatnot for like businesses?
Buying licenses?
Yeah, like if it ever becomes that big, like do you see a world in which like a location or restaurant does that shit?
I mean, this has been like a culture defining thing to the point where like I've been playing mostly at night when the servers work and there are hundreds of like all the bars close down on Main Street and there's hundreds of people outside still at 3 a.m. in little like clusters all playing Pokemon. God. So I don't think it can retain that level of popularity because that would be like the end of, I don't know, the human race. But right, because nothing. I mean, so yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I don't think the game will be popular enough to the point where you can make a business out of hoarding your Pokemon and like fencing people off.
I was meaning like, let's assume you're like, I don't know, Starbucks or whatever. You buy like an exclusive Pokemon for your region for a certain time,
right?
Where the only way the people in your city can maybe get that Pokemon is that they show up at that location specifically.
I think eventually, I think it might even happen as soon as like maybe the next, you know, game, next Pokemon game they come out with because the things like Foursquare and crap like that—that's been happening for ages now. You know, like having these type of geocaching and geolocation type of things.
So, it depends if Niantic wants to actually like sell the, maybe they would feel bad selling exclusive Pokemon in exchange for money, and then like not having it be available everywhere.
I guess so. Yeah.
I don't know what Starbucks is willing to pay relative to like.
I don't think they need to pay. they probably don't even need to pay.
I mean, it's one of those things where maybe smaller businesses would be more open to it, right?
Yeah. It's definitely been a culture-changing type of thing, and lots of people getting more exercises and all these great, these scary stories and cool stories. It's all kinds of stories involved with it. It's been really, really amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait for the guy jumped off a plane to catch Articuno fucking story. That's what I'm waiting for.
Oh my god. I don't think the Google Maps API maps out the you know, just anything above land. So
sure.
shouldn't be getting any Pokemon.
If you snapshot it midair, you're good to go.
Yeah. Alright, well, let's get back to Hearthstone. Just kinda kick off just what we've been doing in Hearthstone. I tried out the Tavern Brawl today. Have you guys gotten a chance to play it today at all?
Not one bit.
Not yet, no.
It's basically miniature Yogg-Saron. You play a card and it casts a random spell. So you can imagine how silly it is. Games are super long, though, because you're healing, you're drawing cards, it's just kind of crazy that fashion. But yeah, just another new one, I guess. They definitely haven't done this one before.
I don't know. I think it's one of those like easy to implement ideas.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be fun for people who don't necessarily have a huge collection, because you literally play fucking anything, and you know, you get random spells. Does it have to do with their mana cost at all? Like, does it scale up or
no?
Down?
It's literally Yogg-Saron. Like, any spell on any target, basically.
Okay. Sure.
So yeah, after you know playing it a couple times, it's just like, okay, I probably have enough of this. This is good enough.
So you play Tempo Mage again with Flame Wave?
No, you don't even play anything. You just pick a class. That's all you do. And they give you
oh,
cards.
Oh, really?
They give you cards.
Holy
yeah.
crap. Okay.
Yeah. So it's really just not
Jesus.
Much. Yeah. But yeah, what have you guys been up to? I mean, Ray, I know you're back to streaming. I caught a few of your streams this last week. What you been playing?
A lot of bad decks mostly. So this is just gonna bug. This is gonna bug me way too much. Can you fix the cropping on my face? Like you and Noxious are both like perfectly centered, and I was like,
I had to recenter.
Yeah, you're moving me. Yeah, I get you. I get it.
Poor Rainad. You move too much though.
Yeah. So I've been playing a lot of random stuff because the season reset. So I wanted to try like all the weirdest decks I could think of. And a lot of them just really sucked. Like, I played a lot of Priest for a long time just to, you know, see if there's anything to work with there. Yeah, I kind of started to realize that, I mean, the more developed Hearthstone is, the harder it is to climb with decks like that, because nowadays everyone's list is just, like, passable. Nobody's really playing sketchy stuff. So, yeah, it's just, you get punished a lot for trying new things, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. It's been fun. I tried like N'Zoth Paladin with like Blessed Champion Burst Finish. I tried.
Wow.
I tried all sorts of Murloc decks. I tried like. Oh god! I mean, there's so many things, man. I can't even list all of it. A lot of Priest. Like lots of versions of Priest. Yeah, it's been crazy. But yeah, all those decks were like not performing super well. So eventually, I just like got salty from losing too much. So I just switched to. Like Aggro Shaman or something. And obviously that went on a winning streak immediately. So it's just like, I don't know, man. It's frustrating. I want to play some original stuff, but it seems like you get punished for it now more than you used to.
That's true. I feel like that's, you mentioned the more developed Hearthstone becomes, but I think it's largely because like there's been a slight amount of power creep over time where it's easier to get completely tempoed out on turn two even nowadays, where like a long time ago you got tempoed out by a Yeti. I mean, the zoo lists were doing it a lot earlier, but it feels like now every class has got those tempo plays, at least the classes that work in the metagame. You know, we're not talking Priest necessarily, but like Priest will punish your janky tempo decks if you don't get like a really good curve that's perfect. Even they can do it. So like at low ranks, whatever that might be, like up until like just about anything, honestly, like people will just punish. You can play fun stuff that can sometimes snowball, like Murloc Priest with Confuse, like the kind of gimmicky shit that you can have fun with.
Yeah.
Like, have you been trying mostly tempo Priest to stray away from control or a combo?
Oh, with Priest. Yeah. It was N'Zoth Priest was the one I was having the most luck with, but it wasn't like I cut all the bad cards, so I wasn't playing like Shifting Shade or anything. I was just playing Twilight Drakes instead. Those are really good. The deck was like decent. It's just missing something. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Well, 2-drop, obviously. I know what. But...
Yeah, right.
I was going to say, like, I was talking about that with the Firebat when we were in China. Like, if they just switched Totem Golem to Priest, suddenly Priest is actually playable. Like, it's ridiculous how you just swap that one card to another class and suddenly the card, like the class as a whole becomes a just a good card.
Well, remember Shaman before League of Explorers?
Yeah.
It was just like straight unplayable, and then the only card that came out was Tunnel Shrog, and all of a sudden it was the best deck in the game. So yeah, it happens that way sometimes.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm going to have to actually restart the stream real quick. There's XSplit's kind of freaking out right now, so give me one sec. We'll be right back. A little bit of XSplit issues. All right. So we're talking about Priest one card away, and It'd be great to see. Yeah. But
you need to bridge the gap, like onto. That's really. I feel like you mentioned Tunnel of Chua kind of making, like, being the glue that makes Shaman work, because they already had Totem Golem, they already had Tuskar Totemic. I guess Vitality Totem lowered the value of that one for a little bit, but like they needed a little bit more to push that, and like the totems are so much more valuable with Thing from Below, like just as a standalone thing. So when you have like all of that working together. I'm not even sure. Like, I think Tunnel Shrog has been cut in a few mid-range decks. Like, people have been trying just Argent Squire instead and curving up a little higher. That's been interesting.
It's been cut altogether? I mean, I've definitely seen the Argent
Tunnel
Shrog
has,
but
yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely been interesting. But, you know, you're coming back from Star Ladder, obviously. Then there were some interesting decks at Star Ladder, and just the tournament overall, I think, was a bit different than what we've seen with HTT. 6-0 ended up winning it, which was really, really cool. He got a nice big check there at the end. But what are some of the cool moments or decks that you saw? We have 6-0's decks, which we'll take a look at in a second, but I figured Noxus, you should maybe talk about some things.
I guess, like, overall, what I'd have to say about the event was, like, the decks were cool. There was a pretty good amount of diversity, but I think, there were a lot of misplays that event. For, like, the 8 players and the amount of series we had, there was a ton... Yeah. Of little slip ups here and there, and like some of them just cost the games. Like it's just maybe misunderstanding how to play certain matchups. And I think it comes down to conquest, like best of 7 requiring you to bring so many more decks. Like the range of decks you have to be able to play well against every single possible matchup leaves you with a ton of information to absorb. And some people were obviously not too familiar with the decks that were running and how to play them against other archetypes. So that was one of the really big highlights, I want to say. So I guess, you know, the meta game for being this deep into Old Gods was very diverse. To this day, I think, like, this is one of the more diverse metas and the more quote-unquote shifting metas we've had in a long time, this deep into an expansion. And I'm not sure exactly what to attribute it to, even though we don't have priests and paladins, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just been such a big change from...
Yeah.
Like, when the expansion came out, it was probably the biggest change that's ever happened in the game, to the point where, you know, expansions actually left, the biggest expansion ever came in. So it took, basically, like, at first all of our decks were pretty bad, and now that it's just taking like more time, I guess, to define a metagame and refine the deck. So I think that's why it's been kind of been variety for so long in the metagame, because you get to actually discover like what's actually good over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much what's happening. Like, I'm just wondering if that trend's going to keep going with the next adventure, because, you know, we kind of do within a month or so for possibly another, probably it's going to be an adventure as far as I'm aware. The issue is, like, we don't know the theme, and I don't know that we'll get, you know, that much variety after that one. Like, I feel like we'll take what we've already got now and mess with it a little bit, but, like, what they'd have to release to shake up the meta, holy shit. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it would take.
Well, we kind of talked about this, right, before just the announcement of Standard and things like that is, you know, we'll see a huge shift at the beginning of every year, and then the following two expansions the Venture / expansions will be just subtle changes, right, what we've seen for in the past. And I think we're going to reach that point where it's just like, okay, the next adventure will come out, and then we'll see just a little bit of stuff for about a month, and then it'll start stabilizing again. And, you know, we'll have to wait until whatever, March or February, whenever the big shakeup happens again. But yeah.
So are we getting two more adventures this year? Or are we getting one adventure and then another big expansion?
I would guess it'd be one of each.
It's one of each as far as I understand it. And then we lose BRM, League of Explorers, and TGT.
Okay.
Do we lose League? I guess we would lose League too. Wow, I didn't even expect that. I knew BRM and TGT, but wow.
League's gone as well.
Crazy.
That's the last one. Yeah, I mean, you're losing a ton with that. Like, Reno decks are out, of course. Elise Starseeker's out. Finley's out. Like, we lose Totem Golem, Tuskar Totemic. Mm-hmm. So, like, the era of Shaman with the rotation might just go back to dumpster tier. I don't know. Well, but like, what do you expect? Like, do you expect the expansion, like the adventure mode, to change much?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's
hard to say. I mean, it's
It depends on if it's made the way that League of Explorers was. Like, League of Explorers is such a cool adventure because it's probably some of the best designed cards in the history of the game. Discover mechanic, which everyone loves. The card Reno, Bran, Elise, and Finley, all four legendaries, were insanely impactful and super unique and not oppressive. So it was just like probably the best expansion they've ever made. I don't know if they can do that twice, you know?
Yeah, it feels
in
like
my experience, Blizzard makes cards like Flame Juggler. Try not to.
We could always have that, dude. Whenever you summon a totem, deal 2 damage at random.
Oh, man, that would be not good. Definitely not good.
1 mana, 1/3. You have to make it a 1 mana, 1/3.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyways, getting back to Star Ladder, why don't we take a look really quickly at Sixo's decks that he had, 4 of them. Let's see, the one that stands out to me the most was the Zoo deck. It was much faster than the Zoo deck that we've seen for a while. We've seen some faster ones too, but this was another level with Argent Commanders and Horse Riders and just lots of charge minions.
I think this deck wasn't really Sixo's initially. There's been a write-up by Dark Shadow and Censor on the competitive Hearthstone side, and they mentioned that Sixo ended up taking the tournament with it. So it's not his list necessarily, but, you know, like every single Hearthstone deck, it tends to shift back and forth. This is a much more aggressive list with, I think, like the top deck potential of that deck is really fucking good. Like you lose Forbidden Ritual, you lose Darkshire Councilman, but the value of those Divine Shields is like just ridiculous. Lens Carrier looks like nothing until it sticks on like a 2/1 that got buffed by Young Priestess. Then suddenly it's a disaster. It's really tough to push off.
Yeah, Ray, this looks like your cup of tea right here. Like, what do you think of this deck?
Which one, the Zoo?
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of how that one's built. I've tried a lot of different Zoo lists, and if you're gonna build it that way, I'm more of a fan of like going full fist Draxxus and stuff. But this one's playing like random Argent Commander and stuff, which is just not very good. There's also no power overwhelming, so I would have. I don't know. Like, it's playing Lance Carrier, but then it's playing, like, Young Priestess instead of Possessed Villager. I actually think his deck is, like...
It's surprising.
really badly built. Yeah, well, it's not surprising. It's just a testament to, like, how little it matters the way you build Zoo. I get that, like, the justification for Young Priestess is it's a 2-1, you want to attack face, you want to get this damage in. But then, like, you don't have the power Leroy finish. Yeah. The Zoo deck... that I think is kind of better at doing this thing that this deck's trying to do is like with Azure Drakes and Mortal Coils.
Right, and Coiling It.
Oh,
sure.
Wow. Okay.
But this one is like, I don't know, it's just like less efficient, I guess, at doing it. It's not even the right word. It's the kind of deck that just gets straight up beaten by like a Fiery War Axe. And because you're not playing things like Possessed Villager, like if you play Young Priestess and they play Tunnel Trog, you've lost the game, like on the spot. I mean,
it's been kind of a trend. Like this deck, the way that I've seen it in the tournament work is usually don't give them trades, right? Like you let them trade into your stuff. Usually against aggro, the fact that you can get Divine Shields like kind of helps mitigate some of their upsides. It's usually about vomiting your deck. Like your hand, like you basically never go for like a life tap off curve, like or like on curve where you'd rather play a minion. You literally vomit your hand. You just don't hold, and then you just draw Soulfires, go face your Argent Commander against Warriors. It's really just good because of Warrior being so prevalent. Like even if the War Axe fucks you, usually you end up flooding them, and the one damage AoE actually doesn't fuck you as much from what we've seen. So it's just been.
Okay.
An interesting tweak on Zoo. Like, again, I'm not... I think the element of surprise was a big role in Sixo's general success. But the whole comeback potential of just being able to draw Chargers off the top, it's pretty good. Yeah, no PO was weird.
Yeah, and just to sum it up for the folks listening and not, can't really see this, there's two Young Priestesses in this, and an Argent Commander, a Bran Bronzebeard. No POs, like they said, no Leroys. And there's actually Wrath Guards in this too. So that's
no Councilman, no Councilman, Forbidden,
no
Ritual.
Forbidden Ritual. Yeah, no sure. Giants even, or anything.
Even Wrath Guard, just in Flame Juggler, I think, even in a strategy like this, and I tested a lot of Wrath Guard. I'm like 90% sure it's worse than Flame Juggler. But yeah, even with my luck, It's worse than playing Joker.
Like, that's saying a lot, man. That's
but yeah, but that's just that's the power of Zoo, man. It's just like there's so many ways to build it, and it just matters so little. It's just such a good deck.
Yeah.
One of the notorious openers that Zyxel got during the event was Young Priestess, Coin Young Priestess. Like, that was the beginning of the end already. Gosh. Like, when you get those nutty openers, and that is, like, that's arguably like better than the double flame.
It's definitely better.
So, it's one of those things where, like, the overall performance of the deck is hard to evaluate with just a small sample, but the element of surprise alone will get you, like, one season of top 100 legend, let's say, I think, and then maybe you'll struggle in the next one when people know what the fuck's up.
Yeah.
So...
All right, well,
yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, the other decks, let's just take a look at the Shaman deck. This is pretty much the mid-range Shaman that's been, you know, been going around, has the Alakir at the end. Anything particularly stand out to you guys? I mean, if anything, it's like maybe one or two cards
Azure
weighted
Drake.
Differently. Yeah, two Azure Drakes, that's true. Azure Drakes. Yeah. There's no 7/7s in this deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Deng Zhu's list. This is the one we have on the snapshot, I think. Wins you tournaments.
Yeah.
it's a good deck. I didn't like fully understand the Drakes because Lightning Storm seems to be like the only card that benefits, but it's built for more like an attrition based play style, and it's definitely a very good deck. Like I definitely default to his judgment for Shaman. But yeah, like it's a great deck, really. I've played it myself. And
yeah, me too.
Yeah, every card choice is like very deliberate. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I found it really interesting because, you know, the turn four is never trying to play on curve. So that makes the overload that you get on three like a lot less of a pain in the ass. When you curve yourself like into a Zoo early storm, then your turn four can definitely consist of hero power or just, you know, any two drop. The fact that he's running, you know, one mana tide instead of this, like some people are running two nowadays, which is just super fucking greedy. I think that's just way too slow in many cases. And usually, like, it loses you certain matchups that you otherwise auto-win.
Why run it when you're going to get one from Tuskar anyways, right?
You got to get two from Tuskar.
You got to get two from
Stormcrack, by the way. I guess, like, that's the one card that maybe a lot of people don't put in mid-range. But, like, that card's just...
Oh, that card's great. I love that card right now. Yeah.
It's ridiculously good. And I'm surprised, like... I'm surprised it took so long for it to make its way into, like, so many decks. Like, that card just seems... Like, it's not a crackle, but it's also not inconsistent. Like Crackle can feel sometimes, like you never get those crazy bad beats where
deals more damage than Crackle every time.
Every time, yeah. Every time I play it, does more damage than my Crackles. That's for sure. And yeah, I mean, you kill Totem Golems with it one for one, Tomb Pillagers if Rogue ever shows up, which, yeah, I'm not happening.
That's been the big thing.
I think Frothing Berserker.
Exactly. Frothing's been great to kill too with that thing. Yeah. So it's been a lifesaver, honestly, that card.
Yeah, there's a massive difference between 4 damage and 3 damage. Like in the Shaman Mirror, especially Totem Golem's the best card, so it's like just absurd to.
What do you think about dropping that Lightning Bolt and running just 2 Stormcracks?
That's fine too.
That's fine too.
Yeah,
I don't mind it, but you might need the one mana 2 damage.
I think the only reason that the deck has, the Bolt is because it's playing Azure Drakes. It's like more flexible. You'd rather draw like one of each so that you can go Azurdrake Bolt on 6.
Mm-hmm, right.
But yeah.
That's true.
Mm. You run Blood Mage in here ever?
I don't know about that. But...
You have to add more spells, but I don't know where you'd find the like room for that.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing right now is to fit anything into this. I feel like you have to drop something that's pretty important for what you're trying to achieve.
Drake probably would be a cut.
Yeah, Drake
would likely
be the... I think the Drakes are probably the first two things to drop.
I wouldn't cut it for Blood Mage.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, looking at the Mage, so this is a Yogg-Saron just tempo type of Mage. The tempo Mage that we've seen in the past. This deck's pretty popular right now. I don't think there's many differences than the one that we see. There's a Polymorph in there.
There's a pretty big difference, actually.
Which one? Let me see.
Like, so there's been kind of two ways to build the Tempo Mage, and it's kind of been the Kabbalist Tome approach over one elemental. Like, do I just play more spells, or do I play like the regular quote-unquote tempo, try to get the minions on board and get them to stick? Like, this deck's running Archmage Antonitis at the top end, and it's kind of interesting because... Like it's like the whole Water Elemental list with Archmage Antonitis finds less of those spots to use the Archmage efficiently, I find, compared to the Kabbalist Tome list. Just because you end up using those spells so aggressively to keep your board during the game that you rarely have them later. So, like, you can't cheese out a win as regularly, I feel, against other tempo decks.
Hmm. Okay. Ray, what do you think of this deck?
The mage?
Yeah.
It's, I don't like the Antonitus. It is a good deck, like, overall. Like, all tempo mage lists are good. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of the Antonitus, and Yogg-Saron is a card that is definitely, like, very good in tempo mage, but I found that, like, if you are playing a faceless summoner list or just one that is playing, like, more minions than usual, then the card kind of underperforms a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. It's tough to say, like, what the best late-game finishers are, because you have so many options. You can play, like, Ragnaros and all sorts of stuff. But, yeah, it's definitely a good deck overall. I'm a little sad to see Frostcaller's not being played too much, but that's all right.
Yeah.
I think it fits this type of deck a little bit more. Like, it's interesting because, like, the Archmage list, we had... I think Naaman brought a similar list, and he was playing Double Tome, I think, over the Water Elementals and yada yada. Jab as well was playing the Tempo Mage, I think. Actually, Jab was the player with the Tempo Mage with Kabbalah Stones. And what's interesting is he actually had a deck that made Archmage work better, since he was running more spells, and he actually identified a lot of spots where it was just correct to wait. But Sixo's list was an in-between that makes, like, the whole archetype a little bit awkward, I found. Like, even Firebat... bet that 6-0 would actually just get completely fucked up by even bringing that deck. Ended up not being the case since he took the event, but Firebat, you know, by playtesting against 6-0, I think went like 12-0 over this specific tempo mage list. So definitely not the one that I think a lot of people would prefer running. Like, I think it's an awkward in-between, and it's too slow to be a hybrid deck.
Okay. And finally, the Druid deck. This is a little bit of a difference, too, given that there's no... As I guess instead of Wisps of the Old Gods, he decided to go Onyxia at the end just to fill the board and maybe get a combo, you know, with Savage Roar or even Power of the Wild. What do you think of this?
Yeah. Right, more now, like Scenarios was cut from Onyxia.
Yeah.
But... Is this a Wreckful's list?
Oh, Wreckful's? Really?
I think Wreckful's the one that cut the Scenarios for Onyxia.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. But yes, it's a great deck. It's one of the highest win rates in the game right now, and definitely a deck that's I would say underplayed. There's no Druid of the Claw, but you can't really fit it because even the cards that look ridiculous, like Mulch and Feral Rage, like, are pretty important. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very good deck though. Definitely solid.
So the fact that two of these decks have Yogg-Saron in it, and, you know, 6-0 winning is
it's pretty much a testament.
Yeah, it's just a testament to
testament to Blizzard's. It's a testament to how many fucks Blizzard gives about competitive Hearthstone. Like that, like that card is cute, right? It's fun to play and everything, but like, did it need to exist exactly the way that it is? Maybe there's no way to balance an effect like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, like, there were a few mentions. I remember Ben Brode mentioned, like, giving it overload when it casts a spell and whatnot. Like, it's a small change, but, like, ultimately, when you play Yogg, you either win or you just get completely blown out afterwards by killing yourself on the back of it. So, like, adding the overload wouldn't really change
How often do you get an overload spell? You know, it's...
I haven't calculated, but the point is, like, would that even be enough to, like, mitigate its usefulness? And, I'd argue that it just isn't. Like, I don't mind Yogg being, like, a good card in general. I just, like, it's kind of weird that it's so highly consistent. Like, when you run the probabilities of it making you come out ahead when you're so far behind. Like the gap between where you were before the Yogg and where you end up after the Yogg is just way too fucking huge. Like, the spread is absolutely ridiculous on, like, how much that guy does. I think Yogg could have been cool if it cast a spell for each player instead of just one, because that way it's like it's so one-sided.
Oh, that would take forever.
But you get the idea, right? Like, it evens out at least.
Yeah.
That way it would be a ridiculously fun card. Somebody would still have fun by playing it, but it's not like just actually a neutral card that's better than Antonitus. Like, the fact that most tempo mage decks play Yogg and don't play Antonitus is disgusting. Yep. Like, you know that's a mistake then. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. And there should, yeah, that's kind of the class legend, or at least the one that's defined the legend for Mage for a long time.
It's not going to like stop being a deck, right? Like it's going to be in standard for like another year, and
yep, I don't know. it's not going to go away.
The people that like don't watch Hearthstone super often, they'll like tune in once in a while, and they'll see a card like Yogg-Saron being played, like a Yogg-Mirror match, and they're just like, you know, what a joke of a game, and they'll tune out. And it's like that's what I'm worried about. You know,
you know what card they need to do? I should have made this in the Megatorp workshop. They should make a card that prevents an Old God from being played, because that's the issue I think with Yogg too, is that you can't do any. There's nothing preventative you can do.
Like, you can play Mana Wraith, bro. Just have you can
okay,
play.
Okay, all right,
you know.
Sure. Yeah,
you yeah. Can but people theorize that somebody would start playing Mana Wraith when the Old Gods were announced. The issue is like, God's just fucking awful. You'd have to make like a six, like let's say a 5 mana 4/7 that makes it so you can't play minions above 8 mana. But that kind of shuts down a lot of late game strategies. I wouldn't even hate it. It's just one of those limitation, I guess, types of cards or tech cards that really like can become obscene.
Yeah,
the tech, like when you're teching against specific decks.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, that's going to conclude the Star Ladder segment. Why don't we move on to a new segment that we're introducing today, which is Megatorp's Workshop. This is something that Noxious has been doing for some time now, and we wanted to add it to Valuetown too. And actually, Noxious, why don't you take the lead on this?
Sure. So Megatorp's Workshop's a show that I used to do a lot more often than I do it now. I mean, it's kind of something that I do on and off nowadays because I'm lacking time. But the general idea of the show is to come up with custom card ideas, just any random class or theme, and I pick one and just make a bunch of cards for them. Mm-hmm. I used to do that with the Shiv. And now that I'm doing it solo, it's taking a little bit more time. Plus, sometimes it's fun to have somebody to bounce ideas back and forth with. Yeah. In this case, though, I took 4 cards that I made over the course of the past 2 years, I guess, and just wanted to show them in the episode. And I think we'll have more of that happening every single episode. I'll show up with new cards that I haven't made yet. And it'll just be something to present and discuss, like the possibilities of what can be done in Hearthstone. Again, billions of just about honestly anyone can come up with a card idea. The issue is like how much of a balanced card is it? So when I look at Blizzard's development style at this point, I used to be way cautious about this, like the balancing of stat lines and stuff. Nowadays I just realize sometimes they're kind of winging it as well. It's just like they slap on a stat line on some, like Challenger 6/6. So I'm just like, you know what, let's just make cards and like stop like worrying about fucking trying to balance it.
Hey, when you're brainstorming, it doesn't work. Brainstorming, sure. Just like throw ideas out.
And so those are brainstormed ideas, and I hope you guys enjoyed the cards. The first one that you see on the screen is King Begurgle. So following the Murloc theme, I guess, of the new Shaman Hero. It's a 3 mana 3/3. Whenever you play a card with Overload, you summon a Puddle Stomper. So it's really just kind of a like some kind of Vile Teacher, but for Murlocs, for Murloc decks. There was no purpose to making it specifically Overload. It was meant to work with the Siltfin Spiritwalker, which summons, draws you a card when the Murloc dies.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's just to maybe incentivize people to play Murlocs more. The issue is like it's playable in every Shaman deck ever, no matter what it is.
Yeah, like this would just be an easy add. Like this,
sure.
This is basically a better version of Unbound, right?
It's kind of Razorfin Hunter, where you play like on turn 4 instead of play it 1 turn later, and you get the value from the Overload, let's say Lightning Bolt, and then you get an extra 3/2 on top. And then whenever you play another Overload on top of that, it just becomes a complete clown fiesta. But it's kind of a powerful Violet Teacher, I guess, with a slight drawback.
Puddle Stomper's pretty strong, though. It's a pretty big
one. It's a 3/2.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, most Overloads are like 1 or 2, right? So you're essentially getting a 2 mana drop for
most
that.
Most Overloads are 1 or 2?
Yeah, like...
I like...
Are they?
Lightning Bolt, Crackle, Feral Spirit.
Well, that's 3.
I'm talking about the Overload itself, right?
Yeah, so but this doesn't summon a Puddle Stomper per Overloaded Crystal. Like, this is not a Tunnel Shrog.
Oh, it's just a single Puddle Shrog. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, okay. God, I thought it has one, like, per Overload.
No.
Overload.
Fuck
like,
off.
God,
fuck off.
Crazy.
That would be ridiculous.
Okay. All right, Ray, you like this card?
Yeah, man. Shaman doesn't have enough good cards.
Yeah.
next expansion. It would be curve this into my underpowered flame wreath.
We get my underpowered flame wreath.
You have 2 3-2s on top of your 4 mana 7/7.
Yeah, yeah.
Doctor faceless. Yep.
But to your, I guess to the theme of it, it would be nice to see some shaman, murlocs, given that there are shaman murloc cards. And as well as, you know, the new hero is also a murloc too. So, yeah, that would be good to see.
Yeah, but again, like, you have to take these cards in a specific context as well. Like, the current state of Shaman was not what it was when I made this card. We had no Thing from Below. Yeah. We had no, you know, crazy totem golems and whatnot. It was a much quieter time in Hearthstone.
Okay, next one we got Rabid Ogre.
So that's just a really high stat card with a huge drawback. So it's a 2 mana 4/4 neutral. 50% chance to attack your hero instead of an enemy. So what this guarantees is that, unlike Ogre Brute, you can't actually just remove all their minions and never hit the wrong target. Which, with the 3 mana 4/4 Ogre Brute, sometimes happened. You know, you isolated the board and you could just swing at face. It wasn't even, you know, that great then. But this is just another, you know, more proactive Ancient Watcher, I guess.
Okay, that's cool. Like, one of those cards that maybe will see some light in, I would think, like, Arena more so than Constructed.
I don't know, man.
It'd be interesting to attack my own face.
It's a 2 mana 4/4.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of this, Ray?
Oh, man.
Flame Juggler.
I don't know. It's not like turn 3 coin flips. The design is interesting.
Yeah.
It's got to be, I would make it. This is the thing. I don't like early game RNG. I think it's really bad for the game. So what I would do is make it like
4 mana 7/7.
Like an 8 mana 30/30.
Okay, like that.
God, 8 mana.
Like that's
literally a coin flip to win the game or not.
Isn't that worse than a Yogg? I guess it's not Battlecry, right? So they can always opt to let you take the coin flip or not.
Wow,
8 mana 30/30. Yeah, that's more than a Rabid Ogre, dude. We're gonna need a new name for it because
that would actually be terrible.
It's no longer an ogre at that stage. But all right, sure. It's one of those just interesting drawback cards. I was working on a bunch of drawback base cards, and that was one of them.
Okay,
which I thought was pretty cool.
All right, next up we got Reforestation. I guess it would be a druid card, of course. Draw a card for each tree ant you control.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think Blizzard should do more is probably publish Treant cards. Like, I think the tribal is really cool. Like Cenarius, Poison Seeds, Soul of the Forest, Force of Nature even nowadays. Like, I think there's a huge potential there they could tap into instead of just leaving it, I guess, dormant. I don't know how much they want to make Treants as standalone cards. Like, does an Ancient of Lore or Ancient of War count as a Treant? I personally like it to be the case, but they haven't really shown any desire to make that happen. So a 3-mana card that draws you a card for each Treant you control would have to have a bunch of supporting cards in it. But I guess as long as you have Soul of the Forest and Force of Nature in the core set, that card could also exist and probably do some decent work in certain archetypes.
Okay.
It's kind of like a Cult Master, I guess. If you've played Soul of the Forest, you have your stuff still alive, trade it away, then draw a bunch. Could be worth it.
Yeah, I think you get away with making it cost 2, even. Sure. It's just, at least with the current cards that are out. But yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Creating a Treant tribe would be...
I'd love it.
Pretty interesting, too. I mean, right now, they still haven't even completed the Beast one, in my opinion, just for Druid. So adding another one, that would just be, like, even more things for them to have to do.
So are you saying Druid of the Fang, the 5-mana 7/7 conditional card, is not a good card?
I wish it was a good card. It can be a good card, but it's, yeah, it's still
not.
Let's
stop you right there. Flame of the Spaceless.
right. Yeah, so I'd like to see it. It's definitely it matches the theme for sure. Just druids, treants have always been a big part of druids, and drawing cards is actually it would be a great thing actually for druids. I think that'd be
they don't have everything. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like the fact that they don't necessarily have like a specific tribe to them right now. It's kind of I think it's kind of a bummer that they have to share beasts with hunters so much. Not a huge fan of it.
All right, last one we have is Bog Paddle Trickster, which is a rogue card.
Oh, man. Okay, so this this is a card that actually, like, I overstated as hell because I was pretty... Like, Blizzard came up with, I forget which card, that was just a completely broke... I think Challenger came out, and I was like, you know what, let's make an episode. And that's one of those cards I made as a crazy overstated. So it's a 3-mana 5/4 stealth minion. And Battlecry, you literally take a card from your deck and you give it to your opponent, so you thin your deck, and that card will cost zero. So you can give them one of your one of the outs you are counting on getting if you're trying to count for lethal. And they get to play it for zero. So obviously it's more fit for aggressive decks because most of the cards you will give them are going to be cheap and you know very low impact. But as a result, that also means you cheapen the overall power of your deck by having so many low-cost cards to make the odds a lot better. So it's a trade-off.
I think it's balanced.
Yeah. It's like in the... It depends really like the type of rogue deck you're running. The rogue has a lot of trouble keeping the card draw up when... when they end up playing a bunch of cheap cards. So if you make a cheap, like a deck filled with cheap cards, this is basically the only hope you have of making the damage come out, right? So at that point, unless rogue gets a crazy card engine that is not sprint, then yeah, I think this is kind of okay.
I mean, the concept of actually giving a card or stealing, you know, giving a card to your opponent or opponent stealing a card, I feel like it's something that they've been avoiding for a while, but I wish they would add it to some degree, and this would be an interesting way to do it.
Stealing a card is different, right? Like, that feels bad. Somebody steals your card, it's like, you know, I got my own, you know, game plan completely disrupted. But if you give me one of your cards voluntarily, that's kind of a different state. Because you're the one disrupting your own strategy and potentially getting punished for it, as opposed to literally stealing my only win condition, let's say. You steal my Elite Star Seeker when I'm playing like a control deck, you know, fuck you, in a nutshell. That's kind of why Blizzard is not willing to make the whole stealing thing happen.
Well, I kind of like it.
What, just the stealing?
Yeah, like if it's if you're the one doing it, like of your own volition, should be fine. Like, I don't think they would be against that too much.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I mean, I think if it was prevalent, people would just build around it, right? You just wouldn't have a single, you know, single.
Yeah, but how bad is your deck? Oh, you mean if I could steal stuff?
Yeah, I mean if your opponent can steal stuff, you just, you know, you don't run a single. You know, like a, I don't know.
That is horrible, though. That is horrible. That is, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good, because the thing is, like, it's a, let's say 1 in 20 in some stages of the game. Yeah. Like a 1 in 20 of, let's just take. I mean, it's not like it doesn't happen now, but it would be even worse in that case, I think, especially if the card is well statted, for instance.
Yeah.
That'd feel really bad.
All right. Well, that's. I mean, thanks for putting those four cards together, and we'll try to put some, you know, more just. Some more together in the future weeks too. I'm sure we can come up with some priest cards. I mean, that I think that would be pretty interesting to try to come up with, and I'll definitely try to put some together too myself next time. Why don't we talk about some fun decks? I think we talked a little bit about some of the decks you were running, Ray. How about you, Noxious? Have you run any decks while you've been in China? Or
yeah, I tried out the Yogg Druid. But like it's just a standard type of list. I haven't really gone. I went back to Yogg Hunter. I just keep going back to that deck whenever. So I guess I tried to build like honestly a gazillion priests. Ben Brode mentioned that priests had a viable archetype lurking somewhere. I don't buy it at all. I think that's just that's plain wrong. I actually don't think they've got it. Or if they do, it's the same shit as like that famous beast deck that required Hemet to be printed. Like it's just bad, and they just. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
I wasted a week trying to do that after he trolled us with that tweet. Yep. Me and Firebat, I think both wasted a week.
He just trolled everyone, dude.
We wasted a week trying to get a freeze deck to work. Yeah. And,
did you try that, Reynad, or?
Freeze deck?
Did you try Ben Brode? Like, he trolled us by saying there was a viable deck.
I've heard they were considering nerfing, like, before Tunnel Trog was a card when they were just going to make Totem Golem. What expansion was that? Grand Tournament?
Yeah. Grand Tournament, yeah.
I heard they were considering nerfing Totemic Might before the Grand Tournament.
Okay.
Because Totem Shaman was winning too much without Tunnel Trog.
Fuck this.
And so I take that with a massive grain of PJ salt. It's not. There's no way.
I was not aware of that one. Like, I was aware of Hemet being made to counter that beast deck that was broken. But I wasn't aware of the Totemic Might nerf. That one is gold. I'll have to add that to my list of... Here's why you should not expect the...
It was your fault, Ray. Like, I remember when you were running that one totem deck, right? Where you had a... it was your fucking fault, dude.
Oh, Ray, man. You invented Hearthstone, so it's no surprise.
Well, there's one deck that I've been playing. I've been playing this... I found this deck on Hearthpoint's Redknows Top. It's like a dragon deck, but the only difference is that it's... Mainly, it's running Onyxia. There's little things, like there's only one Ikor in it, and there's a Fierce Monkey, but... Onyxia and Deathwing actually at the end of it has been an interesting ending, like given the current metagame that when I've played it. It's actually been really, really good. So, figured I'd throw that out there just for folks to try out. You can see it here. Definitely will link it to you guys in chat too if you guys want to try it out. And then I've also just been playing that Shaman deck that Firebat threw out to us like last week, that Nazoth. With Ancestral Spirit and Faceless and all that stuff. Oh my god, that deck is so fun to play.
Yeah, the Return of Crusher Shaman is a thing. I've seen it on ladder a few times too. Now, as far as the Dragon Warrior deck though, he's playing one Blood Iker, and one Azaz First Mate, one Fairy Dragon, and not two.
Yep.
Like, his top end is really heavy, and he's running only one Draconic Crusher. Like, I get the feeling sometimes the Draconic Crusher kind of acts as a late game threat. And I don't know, like, if subbing it out necessarily for more expensive stuff works on ladder, but maybe I'm not looking this right. What do you think?
It's just of the deck in general, you mean?
Yeah.
That's really good. One of the best decks in the game. But I mean, Dragon Warrior was good since...
Some weeks now, it's been good, right?
Firebat for like since the expansion came out, there's a Chinese list that was the first one that had this shell.
Yeah, I remember
the only thing Firebat changed to my knowledge from that Chinese list was adding the Zoth's First Mate, and then that made the zoo matchup go from close to very good.
And then he cut it out because he said it wasn't good enough.
Yeah, so it's literally the Chinese list that was out like a month before that. So, it's a great deck. Don't get me wrong. It's super good. Probably the best deck on ladder overall, I guess. Mm-hmm. If I were to recommend to somebody to play a deck on ladder, I'd probably say that. It's very good.
It's actually surprising how often Onyxia and Deathwing win you games, too, with the current meta. So give that a try, and let me know how it goes for you guys.
Oh, wait, there's Onyxia and Deathwing in this one?
Yeah,
he's playing Onyxia and Deathwing and Ragnaros at the top, and he's playing four big threats. Like, that's kind of the big difference in the way this deck plays out.
I guess it's to beat the, like, C'thun Warriors. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It must be exactly that.
Mm-hmm. And just to beat other Dragon Warriors, I think it does decent against, too. Like, the ones that don't run those at the end. You can actually clear if they don't have executes and things. It actually does pretty well too. You can get in those weird situations where there's crushers on the board, and I mean they're going to win easy, and then you can just wipe that board. I think Firebat was even running at the very end of last season to beat Dragon Warriors too, just the Deathwing. So that was definitely an interesting ad. Okay,
you getting Zoo too?
Yeah, Zoo. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. If you ever play Deathwing and Zoo, you win. It's pretty good.
It's nice. There's so many Zoos still out there. It's like forever a deck.
Yeah, it's the only the one thing I'm not sure about is the Fierce Monkey over a second copy of Blood to Iker. Like, that's the one thing I'm not a huge fan of.
It's probably just...
like, I mean, there's a lot of subs you can do in this type of deck, which is great, which is why we've seen so much Dragon Warrior around. It's like people have their own little custom lists, and like changing one card in the deck actually modifies... what you went against.
Yeah, the base deck is so good. It's just changing three or four cards and still being incredibly good winning percentage. All right, go ahead.
Sorry, go.
No, go ahead, Ray.
I was just going to say Alex Strauss Champion is like the best minion in the game.
So good.
If it hits, you know? Like,
yeah.
And everyone knew that when it came out. It's just the support cards weren't there. And not just the support cards weren't there, but every other deck was just too strong to play Champion. But now it's just... nuts.
Yeah, no, Haunted Creeper not being around. Like, there's a lot of... I think that the fact that minions didn't die made it too weak to just the leftover stuff, which nowadays, I mean, that's not even an issue. So you kill something for good with that minion, and if they don't kill it, then you deal like 6 damage at the very least to their face, which is ridiculous. That is like the pressure that guy puts in is ridiculous.
Not just that, you can actually get 2-for-1s with that card too, which is crazy as a 2-drop. Yeah. All right, well, I think that's gonna be it for Deck Talk, guys. We're gonna go straight into viewer Q&A. So if you guys got any questions for us, I think I got maybe 1 or 2 on Twitter. You can go ahead and write them in Twitch chat too, and I'll try to get to them. Let's see. T. Jefferson asks about Yogg. Shouldn't 10 mana cards have high effect? Huge effect. Sorry, huge effect that can win you games, but lose if they deal with it. Deathwing is like similar. I guess Deathwing is the example he gives you.
Yeah, Deathwing's a great example, but Yogg-Saron is like, there shouldn't be a card that's just neutrally available that's better than class cards in, like, every way. So, like, how do I describe it? It's just, like, the fact that there's a card... The fact that Antonitis is a card and Temple Mage decks still play Yogg-Saron instead of Antonitis, like, that's a problem. Like, yeah. Then you made the card too good. So, yeah, they should have toned it down a little bit and had the opponent, you know, do stuff. But, like, because you can have bad cards in the game, right? You can have, like, Boogie Monster or whatever, and this can just be an exciting Boogie Monster. If you get sick of Ladder and you want to do something controlly and fun, you can still play Yogg-Saron. And, like, if your opponent plays spells, maybe it would even be better if your opponent played spells. I don't even know if that would nerf it.
I was going to say, like, it might just kill himself, at the end of the day, so...
Yeah. Maybe each of you play, like, 50% of the spells, or you at random, both players play 10 spells combined or something. I don't know. But there's a way to balance it where it's not, like, just better than class cards that are already just strong. So, yeah, like, nobody's going to tell you Antonitis is a bad card. The fact that they make something that's, like, not just better, but like significantly better on average, that you cut Antonitis and you play Yogg instead. That's not okay.
Yeah. I almost wish Yogg-Saron had been made as like a 10 mana spell for a class or another. Like, you pick one class to give it to, and you're like, you know what? Just take it. Like, as a spell itself or even a body. Because it's kind of like the Dr. Boom effect, right? Where that card, if it were a mage legendary, was fine. But because it was made as like a neutral fucking legendary, then it was just like oppressive for a long time, and I don't want it to be the case with Yogg, because we've got a lot of time with it. Like, we're still like midway through the year. We still got a ton of time before you know, the rotation hits, and Yogg-Saron is still going to be around after that. So if it ends up being just a staple card, I really don't want it to feel oppressive like at any point. And we don't know what the fuck they're going to be printing. Like, there maybe it just won't be as good soon enough. But, you know, with the current state of it, it'd be surprising to find a counterplay.
The problem is, like, the honest truth is Blizzard doesn't see it as a problem. Like, rightfully so. Like, they want to cater to the majority of their player base, which is more casual players. So when they see, like, for the first month of Whispers being out, the fact that there's a Yogg-Saron post on the front page with 1 million upvotes, like, 3 times a day, to them that's a success. To them that's a card that they designed well. So
I see.
You know, and that's not, they're not wrong in that, but it's just like, if you care about competitive play at all, it's just like, God, like, would those posts still be on Reddit if card wasn't good? You know,
and it was just hyper random and sickeningly fun, right? Like, the whole both players play spells. If that ends up evening it out, then it would still be there.
It'd still be there
in the end. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one thing that we hadn't talked about, actually, that I was meaning to talk about too, that we can go back to, is you know, they had a patch, right? We had a patch that, that had a lot of, well, not a lot of things, but the biggest thing was like the whole share with friends type of mechanism tools that let me show you that they are putting into the game, and just kind of encouraging folks to, you know, let other people know about Hearthstone and rewarding you for that. So Recruit a Friend is what they're calling it. And you can get the new Shaman Hero if you recruit somebody and they get 20 combined levels across all classes. So I guess general thoughts on just this whole share a friend mechanism.
I don't have the Shaman yet, man.
Me neither.
Feels bad.
Yeah, I'm doing it now, though. I recruited myself. I'm going to be conceding against my recruiter friend account exactly eight times, everything but mage, and then I'll be conceding two games per class, and I'll be at 20. It's going to be like a 10-minute thing after tutorial, and I'll be done with it. So that's kind of a big thing about the whole recruiter friend. It's like an extension of what they did in World of Warcraft. I mean, every game does it nowadays, it feels. So it's like there's no big surprise there. They're aiming to recruit people. At least MMOs do. And like, this is them future-proofing it, because like, this might not seem relevant to us now, because who gives a shit about recruiting a friend? Everybody who already plays Hearthstone or who's ever going to play it soon is already playing it. Like, you're not going to bait someone by telling them, hey, dude, I can recruit you for a free pack. Nobody gives a shit. Like, they won't come in because suddenly, you know, you're getting stuff out of it. And I don't think people will get a bigger kick out of recruiting players because of that. What might happen is you just made extra accounts.
Yeah, I mean, this is more of just, again, a promotion for these heroes, and I wish I could just buy the heroes. Like, I don't really want to go and, you know, play World of Warcraft if I don't want to, and, you know, this type of thing, too. I mean, this isn't as bad, because it's obviously promoting Hearthstone, too, so it's definitely folks I can, you know, recruit. But I just wish I could just buy them whenever I want them and do that.
You know, there's like a free just, way and a
yeah
way.
Just stop, you know, it's cool that it's free, but I sometimes just don't want to do those things, and I don't even mind paying the $5, $10 and getting it. So I don't know, I wish they would do both. You know, you can do it this way and get it free, or you can, you know, just put it up in the store, and that would be great.
Yeah, actually, that makes sense, because like, they're already doing that with card packs. Like, you either buy the fucking things or you grind your life out just to get, you know, a golden boogie monster like once every year. So I mean, there's already that two-way, like that two-speed system implemented, so I don't dislike it, especially since in this case there's no cross promotion, it's literally just Hearthstone. But if they expect you to recruit an actual new player, like an actual person that's not yourself, if that's a thing, then, you know, they expect more than $10 out of that other player, right? Like, if it's actually a new player coming in, the odds of them not spending that $10 must be you know, lower than them spending that $10, which is why they're okay with just making it absolutely about the recruitment.
So recruiter friend is something, I mean, it's necessary. It's something that they probably should have had in the game earlier, just to, you know, again, try to just acquire people, right? Like, just get new users and things like that. So totally see the necessity of it. With these patches and these releases, I just wish they were bigger. You know, if you're going to do heroes, do like 6 of them, you know, do all 9 of them, you know, do something, you know, that feels like a release and feels like something new for us while we're waiting for the next adventure and things like that. These one at a time type of things, it doesn't do anything for me. It's just kind of like, oh, okay, another one, and, you know, read it for a day and it's over for me. And right now, just, I don't know, I feel like we're in dire need of something kind of new coming out and, you know, feeling good. So it would have been nice that way. Ray, what do you think about this whole recruiter friend?
I mean, yeah, it's something that definitely should have been in the game earlier. Good that it exists now. I don't know. I don't really much either way. Like, it's cool. I think it's good for the game. It's Murloc Hero, right? Finally.
Yeah. Murloc Hero.
Yeah, I guess we just need Huffer now for Hunters. Like, the third hero is just going to be a big fat boar.
So some of the other changes, see, Selithith Swarmer is now a beast. Look out. Look out, guys. It's the beast now. Makes sense, given that, you know, what it actually is, should be a beast. So, Noxious, you were talking about, like, Houndmaster and stuff like that, and I'm...
Give it time. Like, give them support. Like, honestly, you give Hunter, like, a Glazuka-like weapon, and they have Bow to play with it, and suddenly, you know, it's not a rogue, so obviously it's not nearly as consistent, but if there's ever some kind of weapon play that can be done with Hunter, then that card's not nearly as, like, disgustingly bad as it is right now. Like, Houndmaster, it's a 5-7. It's, of course, worse than Carrion Grub, because you can't actually attack with it unless... you have a weapon equipped, but the issue is, like, 3-5 is a lot more annoying to smash your stuff into it than a 2-5.
Yeah, I still see it more as an Ancient Watcher than anything else, but
sure.
Yeah, maybe maybe again those type of passive decks will become popular again.
Yeah, another, why not? Maybe one day.
Another change is the experience bar will no longer fill up while winning a game at max level. And my comment to that is, why not just give us more levels so like it can actually fill up every time we win?
But what do you want?
I've been asking for like more like levels forever now, and I just don't see why it's such a hard thing to do.
Do you just want numbers, or do you want like something tied to it? Because if it's just levels, it's pretty meaningless.
If it's something tied, just something simple tied to it. I mean, it could even just be packs, or I don't even care at this point. It's just like something, at least from the standpoint of progression, that all the folks that have already reached, you know, 60 and everything, and golden heroes and everything. We're just
you get a golden weapon.
Yeah, exactly. Golden card back or something, right? I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of us just sitting there like with nothing to do progression wise, and it doesn't seem like such a hard thing to expand, and it's been like this for, you know, year and a half for some folks.
I'm kind of annoyed like about the whole like I really hope that this isn't like this patch isn't their way to push like social interaction between players. But it sounds like one to me, because they've been talking about how they'd like to have that kind of thing added to the game, but they have to be careful about how they do it. And now they're kind of like incentivizing you to play against your friends. The issue is like, it doesn't feel like necessarily like a good way to get a new portrait. Or if the intent is to push people to play with one another because it increases player retention and like overall good feels, I just don't know if that's going to work.
I wonder what the statistics are about people playing each other, you know, just like playing your friends, because I know generally, you know, I don't do that very often, to be completely
honest. Playtesting, yeah, sure, I mean, but that's it, really.
Yeah, so. What percentage of my entire Hearthstone play is that? It's very, very, very little. So, it being social, I don't even know, you know, exactly what they need to do to make it social at this point, because it does feel like a very, you know, solitary game, right?
I mean, you just, roll back to StarCraft Broodwar. Suddenly you've got a social system. But
the closest thing we have is just co-op kind of things, right? Co-op arenas, and then, you know, a lot of some of the top players, you know, they'll have some sessions on Ladder, right, where they're just chilling out. It's mostly just kind of a hangout together on Skype, and then they're kind of playing at the same time. But that's like, you know, that's like the closest thing, and that doesn't actually need to be even in the game, right? So it's, I don't know, maybe, you know, Hearthstone probably isn't meant to be that social, to be honest. I like people to get together locally, and for that it to be social maybe in that way, but online, you know, I don't
with
know.
With Pokemon Go, it's more likely to happen, so maybe they'll have you move to a Pokemon location to play Hearthstone.
maybe, I don't know. All right, why don't we get back to some of these questions, and we'll take a couple more, and then we'll call it a day. All right, it says, iBuckMain asks, what's the best mid-range hunter approach? Is there a deck that stomps control but also competes against Zoo and Shaman? Well, that's a magic question, right? Because if you have something that beats control and beats Zoo and Shaman, then you've got, like, the best deck in the game right now.
Go ahead, Reyna. I'm sure you've got a lot to say on the matter.
Not really. It's just, like, the nature of card games, right? Like, no deck can beat everything, because if it does, then it's broken and you'd be complaining about it. So
yeah,
just pick some decks you do want to beat, and then there are definitely archetypes to do well against those.
Yeah, pick whatever decks occupy over 50% of the metagame, and then just pick something to beat that. Mid-range hunter is just generally good, though. I think mid-range hunter always is.
Well, we had an interesting game in this. Now that I think about it, in Star Ladder, I think Dr. Hippie brought a hunter that was like a hybrid, but not as heavy on the low drop. So it was like a kind of an in between, and it was running high main in it, double tiger, no abusives. You know, it was running like one Direwolf Alpha, double Juggler, double Unleash, and whatnot, and the Argent Squires, I think. But it wasn't running like the abusives on top. And it was kind of that hybrid with a top end that's a bit bigger than the usual hybrid. Like, the double tigers were kind of interesting. So, like, hybrid hunter is kind of a weird beast to toy around with. And I'm not sure it would ever get to that point again. where it beats everything at once. It was like a small pocket of the metagame a while back that allowed for that, but it's hard to imagine.
All right. A Dark Luigi asks, can Rafan be viable in rogue decks that can give you three or more powerful artifacts? Maybe we can expand it just to Rafam in general. Like, you see Rafam ever making it into the metagame? Ray?
It may just take too slow. The problem is, like, as a finisher, it's only good against control, and then even against control, there is probably better. So it's like,
right.
I don't know. It's just too slow. That's the problem. It's not, I don't know. If it gave you all three, then it's kind of interesting because then you have...
Oh, wow.
The thing is, you need to be able to have the +10/+10 one without...
The gimmick of...
The three. Risk of, like, it being a brick. So you need to be able to threaten lethal off of playing that card, I think. But right now, it's not really an option. You can't, like... I don't know how to describe it. You can't, like, be threatening the pyroblast, but then if they kill all your minions, still flood the board with 3/3s. So, yeah, I think if it gave you, like, two of them or something, at least, it could be pretty good.
Yeah, so I kind of like the response. I mean, it makes sense. What if it was, like, a 10-mana 10-10 that gave you, like, the 10-cost spells that do stuff at 10? Like, it's super on theme, like, all the way through with 10 everywhere. And it's kind of a single-handed win condition because it spreads what you can get. If you get more than one, of course.
So, yeah, that could maybe
yeah,
be...
I kind of like that, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
I mean, before we move on, like, I want to again go back to the Rafam. Like, the whole point of Onyxia is to kind of do what Rafam tries to do. By the way, like, in many decks, the whole flooding the board and threatening pressure, Rafam's trying to do that, but it's like splitting itself into 19 mana, which Onyxia doesn't. So yes, it's more vulnerable to board clear, but like very often, if Rafam dies, then you have to do the exact same thing. You're still vulnerable to board clear on the turn after Rafam, so it's just you're giving them like one extra turn to put it together, and usually if Onyxia sticks, like, you're in a pretty fucking good spot. So,
all right, last question, Geronimo LL123 asks, does Blizzard consult with you before making large changes to the game? If so, do they ever have they ever took some of your ideas, implementing them into the game? How about you guys? They definitely don't consult me. Like, how about you? You, Ray, do they control you?
They did for the like the standard wild rotation. Mm-hmm. They're really receptive. They brought us into the campus, asked a lot of questions, listened to our feedback, did the exact opposite of what we suggested. And yeah, yep. It was no, they're actually pretty receptive to feedback. The Hearthstone team is one of the more forward thinking in Blizzard. And yeah, they definitely respect the community a lot because when they're just working on the game at the offices, like, they're always watching Twitch streams and stuff. They're very much just fans of the game. But at the end of the day, like, there's a reason they're making the game and we're not, right? Like, everyone has their own bias on the things they want out of a game. And as, like, a streamer or a pro player, you're going to want cards like Yogg-Saron to not exist, for example. But then a lot of the casual players love that. And the casual players are like, there's way, way more of them. And yeah, they're just trying to balance a lot of different goals with the game all the time. So, they just because we give feedback doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to change the way they develop their game based on that. And rightfully so, like, they shouldn't always listen.
Yeah. Any card that you've given feedback on, or just general design that you've seen produced?
The card reveals they're very stingy with. They showed us League of Explorers like a month before it was out or something, which was cool. I said Tunnel Trog was going to be the best card, and then I said Elise was really cool. But that's it. Like, there wasn't... The cards remained the same. Like, I didn't. The balance was good in that expansion.
Okay.
Finley. They weren't sure what to do with Finley for a long time, and because they were gonna make it discover hero power, but they were like, that's not very, didn't feel very like thematic for Finley necessarily, and I was like, it should discover a monocle piece, and then the monocle should do something. And I don't know. They didn't listen to that, though. No monocles.
They stuck with
no monocle equipment. Yeah. That would have been cool, though.
Yeah. Noxious, how about you? Like, I know you throw out like ideas all the time. You've thrown it out since like before beta.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's I feel like they've definitely watched a lot of the content that just in general people produce. So it's not as though they're not aware of what people make. But the issue is like how much of that they even like. There's so much you can do in Hearthstone that like them suddenly doing exactly what you suggest or what you propose is like very, very unlikely. Like for instance, rotation happened in the like one of the most fucked up ways. Like the only way that wasn't suggested is the one they picked, which is really odd to me. Like because it's like one of the weirdest possible rotation systems, and like I wonder how much of their hesitation to do what people suggest influences their design decision, and maybe the caution with which they design stuff just in general, right? Like they're very cautious overall. Like I feel like they keep talking about the brainstorming sessions that they get, and they have to tone down, do balance passes, and then toy around with like concepts and review everything. But like a lot of that brainstorming just doesn't seem to like transpire just in general, and that's a good thing for the most part because you end up, you know, having a lot of broken cards that don't appear. But all these crazy ideas feel like they're just never acted upon, or at least very little. So I guess like they've watched the stuff that I've done. They've obviously, you know, I think Ben Brode, you know, fully recognizes how long I've been around, but like they never consult on anything. Further back I can remember mentioning anything was like Eric Dodds before the game came out in some podcast that was around back when the simulator was around. And we suggested tournament mode, we suggested spectator mode, we suggested nerfs to Druid. We like all the nerfs that happened to Druid were suggested like in alpha or beta, whatever, like even Force of Nature. They ended up changing Nature instead of Savage Roar, which, you know, we'll see whether or not that sticks around in the future.
Right,
like they hear. But there are like there's so much more than one person to take into account.
Okay,
I think is the issue. Well, long tangent, but yeah,
yeah. Really, I mean, the thing, you know, just the, I guess the moral of the story is they do listen, but in terms of just specific kind of feedback, I think it's very few and far between that we've actually seen any of that feedback become a card or anything like that. All right, well, why don't we close out the show? Thanks for the questions, everybody. Thanks for everybody for watching. Noxious, you want to start the shout-outs for us?
Sure. Shout-out to Complexity and yourself for making the content, of course. Yeah. I'm too tired to think of shout-outs to make, so shout-outs.
Yeah, yeah. Shout-outs to, to Chinese Absolutely. Airlines. Would you like to?
Fuck that. Fuck that. Yeah. A big anti shout out and fuck Air Canada.
Yeah, oh, it's Air Canada. My bad. My bad.
Just fuck it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. I'm done.
Ray, shout outs?
Shout out to Team Instinct.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Team
I
Instinct.
Concur.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
It's the only team. Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
You're all
Nothing
Team
else
Instinct.
Worth
oh, my God.
Out.
You guys are all Team Instinct, too. That's funny, man.
Yeah.
That's all right. Better Value Town Team Instinct, baby. There you go. All right, nothing else? Okay, I guess it's my
that's
turn.
All I got, man.
Okay, that's all you got? Yeah. All right,
he's
cool,
fucking
man.
Done.
That's
you can
cool.
see it in his face. He was done there.
It's cool. All right, big shout out to you guys, obviously, for doing the show with me and everybody for watching. I did want to give a quick shout out to some of the folks on Patreon. We do have a patron for the show at patreon.com/valuetown if you guys, you know, want to support the show. You know, think about, you know, making a pledge there. It'd be awesome and really appreciate it if you do. But I do want to give a shout out to some of the patrons we already have: Lucas Capdeville, Dustin Demare, Nicholas Larry Vieira, Atomic Junkie, Jacob Perez, Ninja Fada, Eric Lynn, Michael Lucy. Thanks so much for being patrons. And some of you guys have been patrons for a while, so, you know, definitely kudos to you guys for that. And then I would like to give a shout out to Mostaza for the last 5-star review on iTunes. Those of you that listen, a lot of people actually listen to the show. If you guys want to support the show, you feel free to leave a review and 5-star review. It helps the show or helps people find the show too, just because of the whole ranking systems and stuff. So yeah, you can do that. Those of you missed some of the show, you can find the VODs on youtube.com/championV shortly after the show. And the iTunes and Google podcast folks, you can find it early tomorrow. Usually it takes like a 24 hours for all that stuff to refresh, so you'll find it tomorrow. But that's, and lastly, big shout out to Tempest Storm, of course, and their sponsors for sponsoring the show. Always yeah. Great. And that's going to be it for Value Town this week. So for Noxious, Raynad, and Champion V, we'll see you next time. Later.
Peace.